At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, welcome to the Bigfoot and Dogman show, where each episode will look at a different case involving Bigfoot or Dogman. We'll look at some cases from the UK, Europe and the USA, Russia, etc. So around the world. This first case that I wanted to give you today was that what was known as the Beast of Ennerdale. Okay, just to show you that these things in the UK have been going on for quite some time. This one dates back to 1810. Now, obviously, we do have cases that go further back than that, and we will look at some of those. But this one's a good case to get started with because it's one of those that the skeptics say it's this. And if you listen to the story closely, there's too many things in this story for me that point the finger at that being just an easy way out. And again, people like an easy way out. They like to put things in a box and put a bow on it and say, that's it, done. Okay, so this account that I'm going to give you today comes from the writings of a guy called William Dickinson, who wrote a book called Cumbrian, or Fragments of Cumbrian Life, back in 1876. All right, but that was about 60 years after the events took place. But so you can see, we're going back away here. Ennerdale itself is located in northwest England, just below Scotland, in a place that we call now the Lake District. Okay, the landscape itself is hills and valleys, streams, that kind of thing, heather. Not so much in the way of trees, although there is little forests everywhere. But it's basically grazing land. Nowadays we go there hiking, that sort of thing. And it is a beautiful place in the summer. Well, it's all right in the winter if you like that sort of thing. Okay, so let's begin. So beginning in the spring of May 1810, the body of a half-consumed sheep was found on the bleak hillside above the lake called Ennerdale Water. On May 10th, Mr. Mossop, who lived at Foreholme to the south of Ennerdale Water, on his way to Calderbridge, had a brief glimpse of an unknown creature far away from him up on the mountainside. Soon after this, an increasing number of sheep began to be attacked. Every night, at least one sheep would die. Clearly, a monster was loose. This is the place now we know as Cumberland, essentially. At first, the locals walked the hills trying to find the animal, but they had no success, which was not surprising given the extent of the hills in this area. You know, like I said, it's very hilly, valleys. It would be difficult to find anything, essentially. One or two of them, though, had fleeting glimpses of the beast, which always seemed to emerge just as night was falling. All they could do was make out the animal's size, which was extremely large. In the local dialect, grit means great, so that's where it gets the name, the grit, yeah? Or the grit dog of Ennerdale, meaning the great dog, essentially. The ferocious beast killed a large number of sheep, far beyond what it needed for food. Furthermore, it killed its victims in a very unusual way. The corpse of the sheep, their internal organs have been removed and consumed, and their blood apparently was drained from their bodies. Obviously, this planted the seed of superstition and paranormal and that sort of thing in the locals, so people were getting a bit on edge. The situation worsened when more men had to leave their ordinary work and farms, take their dogs, and began to comb the woods in effort to find and kill the monster, without success whatsoever. This beast was elusive and cunning. It did not, on any occasion, stray into the area long enough to be attacked to attack the same flock of sheep on two successive nights. The self-secreting powers, the way it could avoid capture, and above all, its propensity to drink blood, soon had superstitious locals believing the animal was supernatural. It was soon christened, if you like, the vampire dog of Ennerdale. This is because it was drinking that blood. And it seemed to have power over ordinary dogs, who normally would have been courageous. Instead, the local dogs would shrink away when asked to follow the beast's trail. The dogs apparently do this in certain Bigfoot cases, which will no doubt come up as we go along. They refuse to track. Sometimes, when the dogs were a little more positive, they actually pursued the beast, and it would occasionally let one catch up and then seize it and crush it with its forelegs in its powerful teeth. None of the other dogs would go near it. The beast was so fleet of foot that it usually only had one dog to deal with at any one time, as the pursuing dogs would be chasing it at different speeds. The death toll continued to mount. Eventually, up to half a dozen sheep were being killed every night. The beast clearly took sadistic pleasure in ripping the sheep to pieces, often to leave them uneaten. On occasion, it would leave them alive. One particular farmer's favourite ram was watched at first dawn as the beast attacked it. It later ripped out and ate great lumps of quality mutton from the poor animal's rare quarters. The crippled victim was left in the field, unable to fight back, unable to walk, as its hind legs were paralysed. Another sheep suffered even worse. The shepherd drove off the beast as it was feasting, and then found the mutton had been stripped off the ribs behind the shoulders to leave the animal's still beating heart visible. Soon, a prominent local, John Russell, put up a £10 reward for the huge dog, dead or alive. And then other people started to get involved. So they started to put up beer was offered for people that would stay out all night protecting the sheep, food, beer, and obviously money if they caught it. So you can imagine there was a lot of people willing to give it a go. The feeling of panic was really beginning to sweep the area now, and parents would not let their children go outside. The beast seemed to be calculating and shrewd, clever than a mere animal, clever than a fox. No traps ever came close to catching it. People thought that it spent the day high up in its lookout place, watching the scared natives far below make huge but in vain efforts to catch it. The animal's sense of sight, hearing and scent was so acute that it was rare event indeed for anyone to come upon it unawares during daylight hours. When it was accidentally approached in daytime, surprisingly perhaps, the animal never did anything vicious towards the humans. It always took to its heels. The beast never uttered the slightest sound, bark, growl or howl, which is odd. Dead sheep were left poisoned out on the hillside, but the beast was no more attracted to these carcasses, and it, whether it knew it was a trap or not. One of the farmers even tried leaving a dog out on heat to attract the beast. Muskets at the ready, but there was no success to this cunning plan. The male dogs, of course, as soon as they caught the distant scent of the beast, still continued with their policy of cowering and whimpering. They refused absolutely to follow this strange, ferocious animal. As weeks went by and summer drew towards its close, the beast beginning to have a very negative effect. While the men were off chasing it, the poor cows had to wait to be milked. The horses were not looked after properly and often went hungry, and fields were beginning to become neglected. The poor little children were confined to their homes as it was through frightened to let them out of their sight. But all this neglect was having an impact on the women folk as well. With the men off during the day taking care of the fields, etc., and then all night chasing the beast. Finally, a shepherd out on the hillside watching his flock, not by night, but in the cold grey light of early morning, caught a clear sight of the monster. In actual fact, his description was not desperately helpful. Firstly, he said the beast was brown or sandy coloured, and it was well built, solid. It was very large, and its jaws seemed unusually large and wide, and it had a dark stripe on its back. It was a strange mixture of creatures. Some parts of it looked dog, some parts of it looked cat. And it was really quick. It also possessed enormous stamina. The beast was not like anything the scared shepherd had ever seen before. At this time, the beast seemed to be spotted more frequently. Now you'd get posses of men going out, sometimes 50 to 100 at a time, looking for this creature. And this went on for quite some time, but with very little success. Although they got glimpses of the creature, they could never get quite close enough to do anything about it. You know, and they're all carrying weapons. A lot of them are carrying guns at this time. But that would change. All right, but by the end of this time, by the end of the summer, more than 300 sheep had been killed. William Dickinson says, "One Saturday night, a great number of men disappeared over the fells, watching with guns and hounds. The animal avoided them and took its supper on a distant mountain. The men not meeting with him came down 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. A few minutes later, Willie Lamb gave out a yell as he'd seen the beast crossing the stream. And away went the dogs and the hounds, full of cry after him. The hunt passed Ennerdale Church during service, and the male part of the congregation, liking the cry of the hounds better than the sermon, ran out and followed. It's even been said that Reverend Ponsonby could not resist himself and gave pursuit as well as he was able. The run ended at Fitzmill near Cockermouth in a storm, which the weary men and dogs had to encounter in their 12-mile return. The beast's identity was still a matter of considerable debate for the locals. Some thought it was a lion, some thought it was a tiger, some thought it was a wolf. One wealthy farm worker who had recently been to France on his holidays said it was like a wolf, but not a wolf. In some of the cases that had happened in France, when the local peasants themselves also had something similar going on, a lot of local folk thought it was a werewolf. The guy who had been to France on his holidays said it was a loup-garou, or rougarou, and so obviously this pointed to the supernatural qualities of the beast. But people were seeing it as a werewolf at this point, people that were seeing it. Interestingly enough, at this point, when we're talking now, wolves themselves have been extinct in England for about 400 years. There was a guy, Robert Plumpton, who was an owner of land in Nottingham, and he was given the job of chasing wolves in Sherwood Forest by Henry VI, and they were basically exterminated at that point. By the 1500s, there was no more wolves. So it's not a wolf. Right, but the locals came up with a cunning plan to catch it. Somebody thought that it'd be a good idea to put together the best of the hunting dogs into one elite pack. All right, this would give them a better chance of catching up with the beast. There was a pursuit that lasted several days. Finally, the poor monster was flushed out from cover, and it fled. But the hounds caught it, but then the plan appeared to go pear-shaped. The beast took on all of this elite group of dogs in ferocious combat. Several of these dogs were killed outright in a matter of minutes. Then all of the survivors suddenly changed their minds and headed off home to the safety of their kennels. Obviously, whatever this beast is, a dog can be crossed off the list. William Jackson, who lived in the middle of a wild and lonely mountainside, had his musket loaded and ready when he left his lonely farm. The beast was watching him, just 30 yards away. William took careful aim, pulled the trigger, but the 50-year-old relic failed to fire. The beast, of course, made his escape easily. On another occasion, a group of men, armed to the teeth along with their pack of hounds, had the beast surrounded in a small woods, and it was totally at their mercy. It charged out at the weakest link in the human chain, who duly lost his nerve, dived out the way, and the chance was lost. The beast continued onwards and knocked over an old chap by the name of Jack Wilson. Jack was collecting wood for his fire and was completely unaware of the beast's presence because he was totally deaf. The guilty party who lost their nerve was probably Will Roffery. Will explained that he failed to take his easy shot at the animal because he was so surprised by its huge size and unexpected appearance. He would later testify that the animal was some kind of lion. Now, I think it's an interesting point that he was so taken aback by what he was looking at that he couldn't even fire a shot. He was that scared. Again, if it was a lion was running at you, had a gun. There's something about this creature that's not adding up. Meanwhile, in Cumberland, the slayings continued. Sheep continued to die in large numbers. Great was the disappointment, therefore, when one fine morning in July, an enormous army of more than 200 armed men and their hounds found themselves scouring Kinnerside Fell after the beast, which is seen moving towards Hopehead. The huge pursuit went on along the tops of the mountains between Westdale and Ennerdale. And it was there on the wild slopes, and these really are steep valleys we're talking about now, of Stockdale Moor, and then finally into a cornfield near Calder Bridge. But the enormous and prolonged hunt was in vain. After they waited hours, not a single beast was found hiding in the corn. Somehow it had slipped away. And still nobody knew what the beast was. Hundreds of people, noblemen, farm workers and professional hunters had all seen it by this point, but it remained a puzzle. Meanwhile, the death toll was still mounting. And still, haunted by the worry that it might one day change from drinking the blood of sheep to killing children. The longer it went on, the more gloom and despondency the locals felt. As autumn approached, they all made a conscious decision to accept their losses for the sheep temporarily, but above all, to make sure that the harvest was gathered in, and the hunts were abandoned for the moment, as the gathering of the harvest continued. By September, the hunts were back on, combing the hillsides and fields for the beast. Now, the writing was on the wall. No animal, however secretive or cunning, could continue forever to elude so many hundreds of pursuers. A significant chance occurred on September 12th. The beast was seen by Jonathan Patrickson go into a cornfield. The men were able to surround the cornfield, although it had been done in such haste that a few of the men didn't actually bring their guns with them. But Dog's men all waited for the beast to come out this cornfield. One of the wild dogs disturbed the corn, and an old man who had seen it first go in the field was lucky enough to get a shot and to wound it in its hindquarters. This took a little off its speed and enabled the hounds to keep up with him. But none dared to engage him. And though partly disabled, he kept long on his legs and often headed and turned by the numerous parties of pursuers. The pursuit went on for miles. Each of the parties he fled from had turned him in a new direction, and he got weary. He was quietly taking a bath in the river when the exhausted hounds were quietly looking upon him. Then John Steele came up with his gun laden with small bullets, but dared not shoot, lest he might shoot or injure some of his own dogs. When the beast caught sight of John, it made off to Escat Woods, with John and the hounds on its track. A few minutes after turning into the woods, the greatest excitement of the dogs and men, a fair chance was offered, and a fatal discharge was made by John Steele. The destroyer failed to rise no more. The marksman received his well-earned reward of £10 and a healthy congratulations from all them assembled. After the dogs had torn the carcass to bits and the men had put their boots in, the remaining carcass was triumphantly carried to the inns in Ennerdale. It said that the carcass was weighed after all the revelry and all that. The carcass was weighed, and it weighed about 8 stone, which is 51 kilos. A wolf, a normal average wolf, sort of being 100 kilos, so it was half the weight of a wolf. Well, what was left of it was half the weight of a wolf, because this thing was shot, eaten, kicked, you know. There wasn't much left of it when they got it back to the pub, let's say. It said that the local museum, stuffed the carcass, the taxidermist stuffed it and put it on display with a collar on it saying, you know, that it killed 300 sheep. That museum itself closed in 1876 and the beast was lost. Some people say it was that moth-eaten and that by the time that came around that you couldn't do anything with it anyway and it was just discarded. They were singing in the pubs and stuff. It was big, it was strong, it was 8 feet long. It could leap, it could bound, it could outrun a hound. It had stripes in its tail, it gave such a wail, and you'd find dead sheep in the morning. That last bit's a bit ropey, but you get the sentiment. And this is where the story takes a bit of a twist, really, because, I mean, that poem there, 8 feet long, this is what people were seeing. People were seeing this huge creature, muscle-bound. Some people were obviously seeing it upright because they were describing it as a werewolf. Yeah, powerful jaws, able to devour all these sheep in one night. And the story goes that a travelling circus was in the town at about the same time, and it lost a Tasmanian devil. And so what was actually captured was the Tasmanian devil, or Tasmanian tiger, I should say, sorry. The Tasmanian tiger, not devil. And so that's what was put on display. And that, you know, that does, some of the descriptions sort of point to that, because there was a guy who, one of those shepherds, saw it feasting on something, and it was sandy coloured, had stripes on it. So that does sound like a Tasmanian tiger, but all the other descriptions and the things it was able to do don't. So I think we're getting two creatures mixed up here, and I'm not even sure if they happened at the same time. Obviously, the account in the book goes on to say that it's the same creature. But if you listen to what people were saying, the descriptions of what people were saying, it's not a Tasmanian tiger. I mean, these Tasmanian tigers are about the size of a large dog. But again, they don't look anything like a lion. They don't look anything like a tiger. Now, I am aware that in the 1810, people would have had a little bit of an understanding of what those creatures were, you know, and so it's possible that they saw this and just put that name on it. But for me, it doesn't stack up. Now, there was cases of people's collections escaping. We've had one here locally, panther and things like that was escaped. There's the zoos have dropped animals, lost animals. It's happened. I mean, Richard the Lionheart, he had his own private zoo in the Tower of London. One of his crocodiles escaped, and it made its way down to the marshes of North Essex. And the locals there were all running around saying a dragon had come to town because they didn't know what a crocodile was. So you can understand where the confusion comes in. But this creature, or if it was this marsupial dog-headed creature, which was the Tasmanian tiger, it's not killing dozens of dogs. It's really not. It's just not capable of doing that. And some of these later studies have shown that they originally thought that it had quite a decent jaw in it. If you look at the stuffed versions of it and pictures of it now, it don't look very robust, really, to me. It's well known that it used to feed on rodents, birds, things like that. It could catch. It would feed on the occasional kangaroo, or more like wallabies there than the big kangaroos that you get in Australia and Tasmania. They're more like the little wallabies, but it would feed on those sorts of things. So, you know, sort of like a rabbit or a big rabbit, you know. Its jaws, there's a study done in 2011, computer modelling on its jaws, and they basically said that anything over 5 kilos of weight would be well out of its range of just being able to bite into it. So anything sort of bigger than a possum, a decent-sized possum, would be a struggle for this. So does that sound like it's going out killing 300 sheep? The blood, or drinking blood, this was talked about back in the day because a shepherd, Geoffrey Smith, back in, he lived between 1881 and 1916. He'd said, he was in a hut in Tasmania, and he'd said that he'd come across a carcass that one of these Tasmanian tigers had been at, and the carcass was exsanguinated of blood. So that's where we get this, it drinks blood. But no one's ever seen this other than him. No one had ever seen this, and it's not known behaviour for these creatures. So obviously they're extinct now, but it does seem like that one piece of information comes from that story. And it's possible that this creature, just like in the case in Ennerdale, this creature was seen feasting on carcasses that were already dead. You see, it's more of a scavenger. But again, what it did for the locals, when they caught this Tasmanian tiger that had escaped from a zoo and put it on display, that was the beast. So that was the end of it. You know, people could go back to their lives, because it's very difficult to get on with your lives while things are still going on. So it's easier to put it out of your mind, you know. It's like example of going into a haunted house. Yeah, if the lights are off, it's very scary. It'd be very difficult to do your job in the haunted house, you know. But we put lights on, and then all of a sudden you feel a bit about it. Nothing's really changed. You just feel better. So that's kind of what we're getting from this story. We're getting this, and we see this a lot in stories, and we'll be covering them on this show, I'm sure, where people say it was this. Skeptic will come along and say, or it was this, it was an owl, it was whatever. And people go, oh, that'll do. And they just move on with their lives, because people have got lives to lead, you know. They can't be watching sheep all night, absolutely crapping themselves, and don't want to go do it, because if they don't go do it, the sheep die. Do you see what I mean? So for me, it's just a way to put a neat little bow on it and say, that's what it was. So anyway, you let me know what you think. We'll do a poll on this if you like. We'll have a Facebook group set up so we can do a poll on there. If you want to join that, I'll just call it the Bigfoot and Dogman Show, so you can find it easily enough. The YouTube will be the same. We will be carrying out investigations. Some of those videos will be going on the YouTube channel. We used to have, we did a podcast, The Bizarre Tales, so that YouTube channel will be converted over to this, essentially, so you can see these things. So if you go and look for Bizarre Tales or the Bigfoot and Dogman show, you should find that channel and you know, subscribe there. And then if we do these investigations around Lincolnshire and that, I know a couple of places now where there's some strange tree structures, you know, off the beaten path, let's say. So, you know, I might go and film them for you and things like that. But we'll put them on the YouTube channel so you can see them. I've just been talking to a guy who's a ranger, and he's seen some very strange things. He's actually got two photographs of strange creatures. I'll keep my powder dry on this because I want you to see them and for you guys to decide what you think it is. But it's odd. And there's been a few things go on there as well. So, yeah, I'll be covering that on another show. But I will put those pictures on that episode. So that might be the next episode. But I'll put them on there. So if you do join the YouTube channel for things like that, then obviously you'll see these things. But it will be going out as podcast. Every time we do an episode, it'll go out as podcast as well. So thank you very much for listening. Please subscribe and do all that stuff. You know, spread the word. If you could tell a friend, that's always helpful. Review, obviously. I know there's only been one show, so it's difficult, but this is what we're planning on doing now. So thank you very much for your support if you're still here. And yeah, that's the Grit Dog of Ennerdale. If you'd like to know what you think, then obviously you go to the Facebook group, or if you've seen something and you'd like to share it from the show, then the email at the minute is supernaturalpod@gmail.com. Supernaturalpod, so that's all one word, supernaturalpod@gmail.com. That's where you can get all of us. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care out there. There's cryptids about.